We're talking today with Jason Scott, past chairman of the U.S. Wheat Associates, the market development arm for our U.S. wheat industry. And Jason, first of all, maybe for our folks, tell me a little bit about your wheat farming operation. You're on the East Coast.
Sure. Yeah, we farm in Maryland on the Eastern Shore. We're about 15, 20 miles from the Chesapeake Bay, about 50 miles from the ocean. And we grow primarily corn, soybeans, and wheat. We also grow some malt barley, and we have processing vegetables in our area. Every farmer has some little niche like that. We typically grow sweet corn and peas. 300-400 acres of wheat. It's all double crop with soybeans. And it's soft red winter wheat is what we have in our area.
So, you know, why the interest in getting involved with U.S. Wheat and then just 2 years ago going through the officer chairs?
I actually started pretty early, right out of college. I was asked to be on my Maryland Grain Producers Board. We have it covers corn, wheat, barley, and oats and sorghum. And I got some leadership experience there. I went through ag leadership seminar that Maryland has, and there was an opening on the wheat growers and U.S. Wheat Associates, and I didn't really know a ton about either one at that point and got on U.S. Wheat, and it didn't take long until I started to meet people like Don Schieber and some of the past chairs that were encouraging me to further my leadership experience and ran and happened to win. So
tell me a little bit about, you know, as you walked through those chairs here a couple of years ago, what were maybe a couple of the highlights, you know, as you remember back and, you know, representing the U.S. wheat industry?
It all has to go back to travel. I really do like to travel. And number one is probably getting a chance to go out to places like Oklahoma out here and spend some time with the state wheat commissions and get to know some of the growers better that don't come to the director's meetings. And then also getting to go overseas and meet a lot of the U.S. Wheat staff. It's always it's a testament to the leadership there at U.S. Wheat of how good that overseas staff really is and out there busting their butts, if you will, for U.S. Ag every single day.
Let's talk a little bit about where we are right now within the competitive area of trying to sell wheat into the international market. Seems like the Black Sea region has really gotten aggressive.
They have, and that's a region where we really can't compete. They sell a lot of wheat into North Africa, and really the quality aspects aren't as needed for the products they produce there. So most of those places, Egypt in particular, is the big one there, that they don't really need high-quality wheat to make what they're making. So they just go for the cheapest price, and that's somewhere where we can't compete right now. So We've kind of changed our strategy a little bit. We're looking a lot more at Asia as well as Central and South America and trying to promote our quality and our reliability is another big aspect of our wheat that we like to promote to customers.
The soft red winter wheat that you're growing, that's got a pretty good U.S. market, especially. Were you seeing much wheat from your area make its way into the export market?
Some. I would estimate it's about half goes into the export market, maybe a little bit less than that, and it depends on the year and how much supply we have. There was a fair amount of that of our wheat going into North Africa, into Egypt, into Morocco and Algeria, but there's very little going over to Africa now. Most of it is making its way down to the Caribbean, Central America, and a little teeny bit over into Brazil when we have a market there.
Your thoughts about, you know, the U.S. wheat model? We've had this for a lot of years now, where we've had the in-country offices. We've tried to build the relationships. Is this still needed? Is this still successful for the U.S. wheat producer?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the having the central offices in the U.S. and D.C. and in Portland, you almost have to have one in D.C. to keep up with the policy and things there. And that also allows us a chance to work hand in hand with the National Association of Wheat Growers. I think the relationship there is as good as it's ever been, at least in my years with U.S. Wheat. And, you know, our staff is talking every single day. We have a lot of overlap in communications and trade policy. And but then you also have to have the people, the boots on the ground, if you will, out in the countries. And we work in over 130 countries. We've got 17 offices overseas. And I'm sorry, 17 total offices, 15 overseas. And you have to have – it's still a relationship business. It still comes back to knowing the people in the wheat business overseas. And we've got a lot of longtime employees out there that – know everyone in the wheat chain, and it only takes one trip overseas with some of those employees to realize how much of a difference they really make.
Kind of circling back around to your farm operation, you're in an area that you're surrounded by a lot of population. The major population center of the U.S. stretches from where you're at all the way up into New York, Boston, all that East Coast seaboard area. How hard is, in other words, what sort of difficulties or what sort of challenges have you got maybe that some of our guys don't necessarily have on a daily basis?
The biggest one, and it's kind of slowed down a little bit now, is farmland turning into housing developments, which there during the early and mid-2000s was really rampant in our area. I'm only about an hour and a half from D.C. I'm about 2 hours from Baltimore and only about 2.5 hours from Philadelphia. So there are a fair amount of people that actually live down near us or, you know, pretty close to us that commute an hour and a half up to D.C. for work every day. So that's been a big one. And that, of course, drove land prices up. So it makes it, especially for a young farmer coming into ag, it made it hard for me to try and find some ground. But I can say I don't think I'd want to farm anywhere else. I do like farming there. We do enjoy pretty good premiums as far as basis goes because there's not a whole lot of production there. And we're actually, Maryland is a corn deficit state. So our poultry industry really keeps, it's kind of a two-legged stool, I guess, with the grain farmers and the poultry industry. And it's good to have that poultry industry to get fresh chicken to that major population center. So it really keeps Maryland agriculture pretty strong.
I know you mentioned you're fairly close to the Chesapeake Bay, and that's, of course, one of those major waterways that we've seen so much regulation, you know, and a lot of talk about, you know, trying to reduce the pollution levels within the bay.
Yeah, we have had mandatory nutrient management since the late 90s, and it was a major adjustment at first for most farmers, and not necessarily adjusting what the practices we were doing, but the fact that we had to report them, and we essentially had a pollution diet for every single field on our farm. But it's as we've gotten used to that, I think it's made us slightly better farmers. You know, you can't just call the fertilizer co-op and say, go spread this fertilizer. You're double checking everything and making sure what's out there. And, but it has been a lot to do. And it seems like the regulators continually want to add more, you know, so far we haven't found enough yet. but my argument is always that, you know, we're working on a geological scale. You know, this isn't something that you can change a regulation and then you see a difference overnight. It's going to take 20 years. Mm-hmm. And we've actually just done some research with USGS that is showing that some of the phosphorus and nitrogen that's in the bay now is 20 to 30 years old. So we're hoping to kind of curtail some of the ongoing and new regulations.
One last question is in regards to the U.S. Wheat Associates and your role and your involvement with it. You know, kind of throw maybe a little vision out there as far as where does U.S. Wheat need to be going in the next 5 to 10 years?
I would say that this new strategy change we've made basically over the last year or two is really the right decision for U.S. Wheat to promote the quality and to promote the reliability of our product. And that's not something different than what we've done, but we're doing it in regions where it matters more than in specifically North Africa, where we can't compete on price there. And really, for the U.S. farmer, as low as wheat prices are now, I don't think they want to take another dollar off of that and try to compete on price in North Africa. And, you know, we've lost our spot as the top exporter in terms of volume, but we are still the top exporter in terms of total value, and that we're about $750 million total value over Canada and about $1 billion total value over Russia. So that's something that I really think drives home the U.S. wheat message and the reason why U.S. wheat is important. You know, we bring more value back to our producers than producers in some of these other exporting countries.